A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book. A romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
A very good evening and welcome to A Taste of Ireland. I'm Ed Finn. Tonight we're coming to you from Limerick, the home of number one Perry Square. And I'm delighted to be joined this evening by the owner, Patricia Roberts. Welcome to the show, Patricia.
Thank you, Ed. I'm delighted to be here.
Lovely to be down here in Limerick.
You're very welcome.
Before we talk, I suppose, about number one Perry Square and your connection, of course, being a member of Ireland's Blue Book, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about yourself and your own early life and how you came into the business.
Sure. Well, I'm from County Limerick, Ed. I'm just a couple of miles out the road here from number one Perry Square, a place called Clarina, the small little village on the Shannon Estuary. Born and reared there, the oldest of five daughters. My dad and both my parents farmed, dairy farmers. And that's where I grew up. That's where I'm from. I spent many years away, returned to Limerick back in the early 2000s. I always had this notion that the hospitality business was going to be a very glamorous, very easy job where you get to love, enjoy the food that you love and travel and stay in nice hotels all the time. And I had very romantic notions of it. So that actually got me as far as college. And then when I actually got into the workings of it, I realised how difficult a business and how challenging it is. But I do love it. I still love it. I do it. You know, I love what I do and I'm very passionate about it. But I guess it's a combination of the love of food and travel is where it all stems from. When I came back to Limerick, I guess, you know, Limerick 14, 15 years ago was a very different place, the city. It was a very derelict city. And I suppose one of the things, I had an interest in owning my own hotel, first of all. Ireland, the hotel hospitality scene in Ireland was in a very challenged place at the time, 15 years ago. We had seen the emergence of a lot of big hotel brands, like Marriott's opening up in Tullamore and Holiday Inns and things like this. And I really felt that the Irish hospitality scene was losing its falchion, losing its welcome. In my previous business, I used to travel quite a bit in the United States, and I really felt we were losing our edge. And so I had this desire, I suppose, and I always had the desire to own my own hotel as well, and combined with the love of historic properties and old buildings and architecture. One of the things I wanted to do at the time actually was open a country house, but thankfully the banks didn't entertain it, if they did, you know, at the time. But they did entertain a property, number one Perry Square in the city centre, and supported us in that journey.
Yeah, and it's interesting what you say there about the hospitality business. I mean, and the hotel chains that, of course, we see springing up all over the place. Mm-hmm. That is something unique about your property, and indeed, I suppose that would probably be something that attracted you to the whole Blue Book experience, was it?
Absolutely. As you know, the Blue Book is a collection of country houses and restaurants around Ireland, and all synonymous with hospitality and great food. And I suppose the Blue Book is a great collection that we would have all, any, you know, owners aspire to being part of. And it's a fantastic network of very, you know, very shared thinking, and all the properties are very individual in their own right, but the common thread is Irish hospitality and great food. And so number one Perry Square, you know, the uniqueness of the property was that it was a listed building in the heart of Limerick's Georgian Quarter, a very derelict quarter, mind you, 15 years ago. But, you know, we could see the opportunity there to make it a great townhouse, a great place to stay for people, and a very individual experience in the city centre, whereby there was no other independent boutique hotels at the time.
Yeah, and I mean, that's interesting because Limerick, of course, a lot of people may not know, has this lovely Georgian centre, Jordan area as well.
It does. And a Georgian area that has been asleep for many years, I guess. Now, you know, 15 years ago when we did purchase the property and subsequently got, you know, went into a 2-year development plan with conservation architects and all the people that you need to support you in that journey. We did feel that a few years down the road we'd have a lot more neighbours. Unfortunately, we don't yet, but I think it's beginning to happen now. And over the next few years, we've many great initiatives in the Georgian Quarter, like the Living City Initiative, that's going to hopefully make that happen.
Wonderful. And it's great to see that happening. And before you came to number one, Perry Square, Patricia, I mean, were you always involved in hospitality?
I was. I studied hotel management in Galway, and I worked in the country house sector, actually. So, and there were Blue Book properties, believe it or not, in the very early days. I started my time in a place called Tinnakilly House down in Wicklow, and the sister property, Enniscree Lodge, which is no longer there, a hunting lodge, 12 bedroomed up in the Wicklow Mountains, that I ran for, I think, 4 or 5 years. And so I was really lucky. I worked for owners who gave me a lot of rope and, you know, great places, great properties that had that combination of history, heritage, food, and the whole hospitality element was very, very strong. So, you know, I had that experience, which was wonderful, before I actually, you know, took the plunge to do it for myself. I worked for myself with a hotel marketing business prior to the hotel, and I had an office in Limerick. So I was able to see Limerick transition, you know, from, I guess, about 2002 to 2006. You know, that 4 years while I was in the city working, living in the countryside, but working in the city, I saw huge change and huge opportunity for Limerick. You know, Limerick is a small city, not as big as Cork, a small city, very easy to navigate the city. You know, we're a riverside city, first of all, which is wonderful. You know, we have what we call the three bridges, which is the first thing, three bridges walk, which is the first thing anybody should do when they arrive in the city. It takes you down through Shannon Bridge, Thomond Bridge. You get to see the castle, you get to see the falls, the Corrigar Falls, and it's a great sense of, you know, when we travel to European cities, the first thing we're told to do is jump on that bus tour, the open top bus tour. In Limerick, you should walk the three bridges. You know, then other than that, we have amazing art galleries. We have the City Art Gallery. We have loads of independent art galleries. We have the Hunt Museum, which is actually a very well-known museum nationwide. We have a lot of civic trust properties. This year, I've actually taken on the role of chairperson of the Limerick Civic Trust, which is a charitable body where we basically look at initiatives to protect the heritage of the city. And in that, we have number 2 Perry Square, which is our neighbour here in Perry Square, where we've recently opened the People's Museum of Limerick. So that's a very interesting museum experience, and it has revolving experiences throughout the year. Currently, there's the Childhood Memories Museum, which is actually out on the railings of the park right now for all our locals to be able to enjoy it while they're out. And, you know, good news for Limerick is that it will be shortly announced by Fáilte Ireland that Limerick is gateway to the Wild Atlantic Way, a gateway city, which naturally we are by being on the Shannon. But I think that will, you know, show people, you know, exactly where we're positioned and many reasons as to why they should visit. Just recently, I was just talking to somebody about, we have so much history and heritage, from reed cutting to salmon fishing and all those great things that we really need to revive and talk about and tell the story and, you know, use that narrative. And that's what our guests are interested in knowing, is all of that. And, you know, we should start sharing a lot more of that. Like looking at the estuary, as I said, I live on the bank of the estuary, so, you know, I can actually walk the estuary into town, and it's a most amazing walk where you get to see the whole Cratlow Hills and everything along the way. So, you know, we've huge opportunity here to develop our outdoor spaces.
That brings us nicely along, Patricia. Can you tell us what your first choice of music is this evening for us?
Yeah, my friend, when you asked me this, Ed, you know, I think what springs to mind is Enya and Orinoco Flow. My travel days, I remember, you know, many moons ago now, you know, when you were overseas selling Ireland as a product, you know, when this would come on at a trade show or at a consumer show, it just makes you want to run straight home. You know what I mean? It has that very emotive feeling.
A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Welcome back to A Taste of Ireland. I'm Ed Finn, and we're coming to you this evening from Limerick. I'm delighted to be joined by Patricia Roberts, the owner of Number One Perry Square. Patricia, welcome back. That was a nice bit of music there before the break.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you.
And we were saying about Limerick and all the stuff that it has to offer, and it's actually very interesting, I think, for someone that hadn't been here for quite a while, myself, to discover the area. Really, really interesting. And as you were saying, there's a certain edge to the city, which is really nice, and the museums and the galleries. Can you tell us a little bit about Number One and what people can kind of expect when they come to stay with you?
Yeah, sure. Well, Number One, I suppose, as you know, we're tucked away up here in the Georgian Quarter, and we overlook the People's Park, which is wonderful. We often describe it as our back garden, the People's Park of Limerick, which is a beautifully manicured park. The hotel itself, you know, we don't like using the word hotel, actually, Ed, funnily enough. We say townhouse because hotel sums up notions of lots of rooms with numbers rather than personality. And, you know, a hotel with soul was always part of the mission, or was one of the objectives of what we wanted to do here, was to be able to create a hotel with soul. So Number One Perry Square is our address. It is the name of the hotel. It was, you know, it was an immediate, you know, I remember back in those days when we were struggling with what should we call it, Number One Perry Square was the automatic for me. We have 21 bedrooms. We have what we call 6 period rooms, 2 new ones just added recently. The 6 period rooms are all individually furnished, you know, some that have got French influences, some that have more Irish influences on the furniture and the colour scheme. They're all individually named after people who lived in the house. There's the Lord and Lady Barrington. There's the Vanderkist room, which is called after Sophia Vanderkist, who was one of the last shareholders of the Tontine Shareholding Company, which was the Tontine Shareholding Company was a very old company back in the 1800s that owned the block of houses here on Perry Square, number 1 to 6, which incidentally, I should say, were designed by James Payne, an architect who also designed Dromoland and Adair Manor. So,
my goodness.
That's the closest we get to the five-star side of things.
Very good. Amazing. Yes. That's amazing history, though, for the property, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, there is. There's so much history. And, you know, one of the things that we did do as part of our planning application was a historical report on the property. So it was really interesting. We thought we knew a lot, but we didn't until a great lady in Limerick, a local historian, Judith Hill, commissioned a report for us. And it was really interesting. And even to look back on that today, there's, you know, so much history. So the, you know, the period rooms are lovely. They're a lovely experience. Big sash windows, roll top baths, no air conditioning, which a lot of people, believe it or not, love, because they love to be able to open the window and have fresh air. And there's just a lovely feeling in those rooms, high ceilings, and, you know, you just don't feel like you're in a hotel, especially in a city hotel. Then we have our club rooms, which we call after famous Irish literary people. We have the Heaney Room, which Seamus himself stayed in twice when he visited for the Limerick Literary Festival many years ago. A great guest. Actually, the last time he visited, he got the Goldsmith Room by mistake, and his friend got the Heaney Room. He wasn't too impressed with us. We had great fun over it, though. So, yeah, you know, it's, as I said, the club rooms, they're smaller rooms. They're called club rooms because they're typical townhouse rooms. They're more club feel, a little bit smaller, but very cosy. We do believe now we have the best beds in Ireland. I'm sure there's lots of people listening thinking the same, but we believe we have the best beds in Ireland. And while I travel the world looking for the best bed before we opened, we actually found it in Limerick, a manufacturer in Limerick called the Natural Sleep Company, who made us the best bed in Ireland. So, you know, it's Number One was all about getting the basics right, a great shower, a great bed, a great breakfast, and just great hospitality. You know, and that simply was what it was all about. Because, you know, when we were designing the hotel, it was at a time when, you know, fancy mosaic tiles were all in. It was all about, you know, how fancier could you be? Whereas, you know, we stripped back a lot of that. Well, you know, I guess we didn't have the budgets for fancy stuff either. But really, it was about keeping it simple and doing the important things well. So, you know, when we did invest, it was in, I believe, in the right stuff, you know, good beds and good showers and monsoon showers and things like that. But most importantly, I think what makes any good place to stay is a good breakfast. You know, a real proper breakfast, squeezing the orange juice fresh in the morning, cooking the breakfast fresh. And, you know, many people think that that is the case. It's actually not the case. And back in 2008, when we opened, there was very few places cooking breakfast. In fact, you could buy in scrambled eggs. So, you know, things were very much changing. That was the tail end of the Celtic Tiger. And, you know, I think since then we've all learned, you know, we've we've all, you know, re-looked at that, and we've all gone back to our, you know, roots when it comes to food in particular, thankfully, because, you know, we are what we eat. It's so important. So number one then, you know, as I said, a great place to stay, eat and spa. We have the restaurant where Keith is the head chef now of the whole food concept of the hotel. You know, we have a restaurant, we have a long room, we have a private dining room, we have an afternoon tea room. We have lots of corners of the house, like any typical old Georgian house. There's lots of places to hide out and lots of different things to enjoy, whether it's a nice fruitcake by the fire in the afternoon, breakfast, maybe a nice Benedict, a Limerick Eggs Benedict in the morning, or a very nice dinner in the evening, which showcases local produce and suppliers. And then downstairs, tucked away in the basement, are the original vaults of the house, which actually were, it was the rates office for Lord Barrington. Barrington lived, Crown Solicitor for Limerick, lived at number 1 Perry Square in the early 1800s. And the basement area, which we discovered after purchasing the property, was all covered in
rubble. That was a nice surprise.
It was lovely, yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, I can still remember going down there through the rubble and the mice running out. But anyway, we've come a long way. So, you know, at the time, City Council were really good to us at the time and very supportive of what we wanted to do, because we just wanted to restore and bring out the best in the property. Whereas previous people's intentions of the property were to knock it. You know, what we wanted to do, the property just lended itself really well. So the caverns downstairs are now 8 treatment rooms, individual treatment rooms, whereby we actually took down all the original stone and brickwork, but we rebuilt it as it was. So, and that was really just so that everything was properly insulated and it would be protected for the next generation. Down there in the spa area, it's quite a big spa area. We partnered with an Irish company called Voye, which you've possibly heard of.
Oh, yes, yeah, the lovely products.
Yeah, Ireland's only organic seaweed company. And about 6 months before we opened, I was on a plane journey somewhere. And I remember reading about Voye in the Sunday Business Post. They were very new, just like ourselves, I suppose, at the time. They had just started out. And I went, that's there for us. Mm. You know, Irish hospitality. We wanted to be an Irish spa as well. We didn't want to be another Thai spa or an Asian spa. Like, again, every hotel in Ireland at the time was opening an Oriental spa. And I think there was that feeling that you needed to have Oriental influences to be able to do the spa experience right. We wanted to be Irish, and I suppose personally I love the sea. I love seaweed. Mm. It's very powerful. I remember my granny using seaweed and wrapping her legs in it when they were swollen, and with the Epsom salts and all those things, and just the power of that. So we partnered with Voye, and we've been great friends ever since, and they've been good to us. And Voye is an amazing product.
That's probably what brought you as well with your relationship with the Blue Book, Patricia, mm-hmm. because it is such a unique membership, really. And people kind of come to expect almost what you were talking about there, sort of family-run, individual, intimate experiences in a way. Is that sort of what attracted you to become a member?
It was, yeah. We were invited to become a member, I think, probably about 5 years ago now. And
of course, sorry, Patricia, people must realise you're invited to become a member.
Oh, absolutely, you're invited, you know. Yes. There's no knocking on the door. No, you
very
have to
important.
Be invited.
Yes.
You have to be, and I'm sure Shelley will tell you all about that. You have to be invited. And, you know, to be invited is a privilege, and we were absolutely chuffed to be invited. We did think long and hard about it, because I suppose, you know, many properties do offer a fine dining experience, and we never wanted to be too five-star, too fine dining in our approach. We wanted to be very accessible to people, and we wanted to be understated luxury. That was really important. It was all about great food, great place to stay, but understated at an affordable price point. Affordable luxury, I often use the term. And that was really important. So we did think long and hard about it for that reason. Plus, we weren't a grand country house. We were a grand townhouse. But, you know, with lots of thought, which is always a good thing to do, I guess, anyway, think long and hard before you do associate yourself with the brand. And, you know, it has been a perfect marriage. It really has.
Faultless Faultia, as they say.
I heard
that recently with Aidan Limerick. Uh-huh. Wonderful, Patricia. What have you chosen for us for your second piece of music this evening?
Second piece of music this evening. We have a wonderful Limerick artist who I've no doubt will be on the international stage very soon, called call a Limerick lady called Emma Langford, who's just a fantastic Limerick person. Her piece 17, which I think is just an amazing piece.
Originally sung by Janice Ian, I believe.
That's right, indeed, yes. And it's an amazing piece, and that's my piece to contribute.
I learned the truth at 17, that love was meant for beauty queens and high school girls with clear skin smiles who married young.
A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Welcome back to A Taste of Ireland. I'm Ed Finn and we're coming to you this evening from Limerick. I'm joined in studio by Patricia Roberts from Number One Perry Square. Patricia, it was a pleasure to talk to you. Now you're going to leave us for a while, Patricia, and you're going to introduce us to the big chef.
Indeed, Keith Pigott, who is the head chef at Number One Perry Square, and I suppose more than the head chef, he contributes a lot to the overall business. You know, we're very small. We have a team of 40 overall in the hotel, and it's headed up by a wonderful general manager called Breed Nash, who she's actually from Clare, but living in Limerick. So, she's living in Limerick. Keith joined us just over a year ago now, and we are delighted to have Keith as part of the team. He absolutely understands what we're all about and what are, you know, the guest experience in terms of food and the overall guest experience, what we're delivering. But most importantly, Keith is a Limerick man, passionate about Limerick food, and I think he'll tell you all about that himself. So we're absolutely thrilled to have Keith as part of the team.
Keith, you're very welcome to the programme. Thanks for joining us this evening.
It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting us in.
I suppose one of the most important things about the Blue Book really is the food, and that's something that you're very passionate about.
Absolutely. I suppose I'm a chef, so you need to be passionate about food when you spend all day working with it. But I'm particularly passionate about Irish food, about Munster food, and about Limerick food. And, you know, I'm all about where something comes from, and that adding a bit of identity to the menu, because there's so many menus that are indistinguishable from the next menu, because it's just the same thing as the same thing. Whereas when you can actually identify local producers and work with them and get their work on the menu, it really gives a sense of identity to your menu. If you can get food that actually, you know, is from Limerick, is from Munster, is from Ireland, as opposed to just anywhere, it makes a huge difference. And I think the customer enjoys that at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, you have a passion for food. Where did your love of food come from, Keith?
Well, my mother's a chef as well. She actually retired this time last year. But my mum was a chef, and she wasn't particularly fond of cooking at home. So I used to do a bit of cooking under her guidance. My grandmother was a huge influence on me. I can still remember standing alongside her as she was at the stove cooking bacon and cabbage, and getting a cup of cabbage water and dipping a nice bit of bread into the cabbage water loaded with butter. Lots of my early food memories are centered around my grandmother and my mother cooking for me. And I suppose that's what gave me the love for food. I actually worked in event management for about 17 years before I became a chef. So I've only been chefing for the last 10 years. But I was really, really lucky that my first job as a chef was for a man called Martin Beelan. He runs a restaurant called Global Village in Dingle. And he was obsessed with local food, and nothing went on the menu unless we knew where it was from and how it got there. And his mentorship kind of, it's been ingrained in me how important that is. And since then, what I followed. It's kind of the ethos that I followed since I became a chef, that you need to know where the food comes from and how it got there before you put it on the plate.
Yeah, and I suppose that is, it's a challenge to get all that right, isn't it?
Oh, it's massive, because, you know, actually sourcing, it's a massive challenge in the sense that, you know, there's a lot of work to it, but it's actually a wonderful experience, like, you know, getting to meet these producers, getting to meet people who actually produce your food. I think years ago, we all knew where our food came from. Like most of our food was produced in, you know, 30, 40 years ago, most of our food was produced in Ireland. It was produced by local farmers. And over the years, that's become less of a thing. And as a chef, it's really great to get back into that kind of system of knowing who your producers are, knowing that my veg is coming from Kevin out in Ballaniti, knowing that my pork is coming from Caroline in Curra Chase, knowing that when I get goat, it's coming from the Leahys out in Ballyquirk, knowing that my lamb is coming from the Cotters out in Abbeyfield, knowing that I won't have that lamb till August. So I'm not going to have lamb on my menu till August, and it'll be on the menu all the way through to December. That'll be the 4 month period that we'll have lamb on the menu. Then I'll replace it with something else. But knowing where it's coming from, knowing the effort that these people go to produce the food, and knowing that, so when I produce a plate of food, I'm trying to produce the best plate of food that I can so that the customer enjoys it to the maximum. But when they're producing that piece of lamb or that piece of pork, they're trying to do exactly the same thing. So we're all in tune, and that ends up with the best possible product on the customer's plate every time.
But you yourself seem to hit the ground running and when you started off as a chef. I mean, I saw in 2012 there you won the Nore Student of Best Student of the Year. You got a prize there for one of your dishes. So you must have had a natural talent, did you?
I don't know if it was natural talent so much as I'm uber competitive. I spent years playing rugby, and I had this awful desire to win, not at all costs, like, but just to win. So one of the things I really enjoyed in college was the chefing competitions and stuff. One, because it gave you a chance to really hone your skills, and two, because it was just fun going out meeting people from other colleges and competing against them. I'm a competitive soul at the end of the day, so that's why the competition element came into it. But it was nice to actually be able to place yourself and go, all right, I'm good enough, I'm actually decent at this, because I'm competing with people at another level who are the best in their college, and I'm holding my own with them. So it was nice, especially when you go into a career and it's, you know, it was my second career. So, you know, I wouldn't have the confidence of someone who was maybe at it for 20 years. So the competitions actually kind of maybe allowed me to kind of aim a little bit higher and know that, you know, this was the right career for me.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, event management, I mean, that must have given you great skills as well in terms of plating up food, because it's quite a difficult task in a way to get everything timed right, isn't it?
Yeah, well, event management was all about logistics and it was all about lists. You know, you had your elephant list is what we used to call it, because you could never forget anything on the list. And chefing is exactly the same in that sense, that when I come into a kitchen, my day is run off a list. I make the list out the night before with the other chefs in the kitchen. We go, this has to be done, this has to be done. So we have our list and that's our day. And event management was virtually the same. It was time management and managing logistics of producing something. The kitchens are largely that, you know, but there's one of the things I love about being in the kitchen. When I was an event manager, I was mainly kind of a background person, an operations person. There was a bit of creativity involved and I'd get involved in that, but I was always able to step back from it, or I was always able to stay in the background. Whereas with food and working in the kitchen, it actually taps into an artistic side that you have of putting things on a plate, making them look nice. You know, you have to make them taste good, and that's an element as a chef. You can't be a good chef without being able to cook good food. But then there's that idea that you have to make it look amazing too, and that's one of the things I really enjoy, and tapping into that kind of side of my brain is really, it's fun. It's what makes the job so enjoyable.
Yeah, it's great to hear that. I mean, I was looking back there at one of the dishes that you prepared, and we talk about creative there. West Kerry Rockpool, seared lobster consomme, seared scallops, clams and periwinkles. Oh. So I remember the periwinkles in my belly cotton days going on holidays, my granny doing pots of periwinkles, but that is so creative. And I mean, and a mussel foam and dillisk, is that right? Yeah. I mean, Ireland jumps out at you there.
So that's Ireland jumping out at you, and it is. It's a rock pool on a beach anywhere on the west coast of Ireland. But the real essence of that dish is the periwinkles and the dillisk, and that's the reason they are, is because when I was growing up on the streets of Limerick, there was always people selling periwinkles and dillisk, and as a family, we'd get bags of periwinkles and eat them away with our little sewing pin, and there'd be a fight for the bigger ones. And dillisk was just, it was one of those things that was always in the house. So, you know, dillisk is this trendy item in cooking these days. But when I was growing up in urban Limerick in the 80s, there was always Dillisk in the house, and there was always periwinkles, and it's just, so it was a Limerick thing as much as it was a West Coast thing.
Was this like, was this to Limerick what tripe and drisheen was to Cork, is
Well, I think you'll find that tripe and drisheen is to Cork as to what packet and tripe is to Limerick. So tripe was a massive thing in Limerick. And there's another thing, like I remember as a kid, from the age of, say, 8 to 13 or 14, my job on a Saturday morning was to go down to Tracy's Packet and Tripe Shop, which isn't there anymore, and the building it stood in isn't there anymore, down in St. Mary's Parish. And I'd queue on a Saturday morning to get a pound and a half of tripe and a half a pound of packet, which is the drisheen, we just call it packet in Limerick, and I'd bring it up and my grandmother would cook it. And my grandfather, my father, myself, my grandfather's friends would all sit around the table, eat our packet and tripe, and then we'd be off to the rugby for the afternoon to watch Shannon play. So the packet and tripe is a huge thing as well, you know, and all these food. And that's one of the things I love about cooking in Limerick city centre. It was one of the things that really attracted me to working in One Perry Square, was that idea of, as a Limerick city boy, of coming back and cooking in Limerick city centre and resurrecting a few food traditions that kind of have been lost. You know, packet and tripe has kind of been lost. You know, it's still, you'll see it in butcher shops. It was there, Dillisk, periwinkles, you don't see them really being sold on the streets anymore. And all these things are things that I want to reintroduce and get them on menus and get people thinking about their food history and their food culture, because we have a deep, deep food culture in Limerick. But like the rest of Ireland, it's kind of, it's gone a little bit underground, it's a little bit lost. And if we're not careful, we'll lose it forever. So it's, you know, it's about, chefs have a responsibility to resurrect that. And luckily, I work in an establishment that allows me to do that and wants me to do that. You know,
that's really interesting. I mean, almost, you're talking there almost like it's like a renaissance, really, of the food here. And when you talk about, I mean, I didn't realize the depth of the food culture here at all, because, you know, sometimes it's hard. People say, what's typical Irish food? And you'd say, like, oh, bacon and cabbage. And but the local stuff that you're talking about there is, and you bring that to the menu in Perry Square, do you?
Yeah, and that's our aim. And in the long term, I'd like to introduce lots of different elements. Skirts and kidneys were a massive thing in Limerick. Eye bones, which aren't the bone around the eye, it's a bone in the thigh somewhere. But you've all these old pig's tails, pig's toes.
Limerick beans.
Yeah, beans, yes. I tell this story as well on a Friday night. So Saturday was packing and tripe, but on a Friday night, up on Mary Street in Limerick, there was a lady who used to sell crew beans or pig's toes out the front window of her house. She used to have a pot boiling away with crew beans in it. She'd sell them to an old newspaper. And myself and my grandfather used to go up and we'd get them. My mother was terrified at the thoughts of us because, you know, the fat would be everywhere because they are, you know, they're
yes,
ridiculously
indeed.
Fatty,
yeah.
Fatty piece of food. But that's in my memory as well. And, you know, I'm 48 years of age, so all these stories are arcing back to maybe 40 years. But the amount of food history and culture that we've lost in that space is kind of scary. Like, so I want to make sure that those kind of memories kind of live on, and I'll do that through my plates, and I'll do that through talking to people and spreading the good word, you know.
It's very interesting, actually. I was in Paris just 2 years ago now. I can't think of the years the way they are at the moment, but, and Brasserie Lip, one of famous place there, and it was the crew beans and the mashed potato, but they had taken all the fat away, and they had, it yeah. was very fancy, in fact, but it was the delicacy of the place. And I mean, if I could get that here, I mean, I would love it.
And that's it. You just have to contemporize it and make it a little bit more attractive to people, so you don't give them the crew bean in the shape of a pig's hoof. You give it to them in the face of the beautiful meat that's on it, with the beautiful flavour that's in it, and then let them know what it is like, you know, so that, you know. But sometimes there's no harm to actually eat the crew bean as it is, just to get that sensual experience of the fat and, you know, of the flavour and of the messiness of it all. I think sometimes food is a little bit too sterile, and, you know, the yeah. idea of eating with your hands is it. But, you know, maybe the fact that street food has become a bigger thing now because of the pandemic, people are maybe more used to eating more rustically, and hopefully that's something that bring us back into contact with our food, because that's something we've lost as well. We've lost that idea of where food comes from and how it got there and that contact with it.
And what would your, I mean, for your ideal dish, I suppose you'd have a favourite dish if I was to go in Perry Square now. I mean, what are your favourites that you love to put on?
Oh, my favourite dish that I do involves turnip, which is kind of not people don't associate it as a restaurant food, maybe. Like, we all love, we have bacon and cabbage, we also have bacon and turnip, and we all associate it with that. But I love turnip. I think it's an amazing ingredient, and I love to bring it to a restaurant and put it on a menu. And we have a lovely starter where we salt bake some turnip, and we have some baby turnips that we pickle, and some of them that we confit off in butter. And then we use the turnip tops. So there's a stalk on a turnip that looks remarkably like spinach, but it tastes a little bit sweeter. And we'd serve the turnip tops with it as well. So it's just a kind of a bit of shredded pickled turnip as well. And then as a sauce, we just simply fry off an egg or poach an egg. And the yolk from the egg is a beautiful sauce on it. So just really, really simple cooking, but really amping up the taste of the turnip. So if you think of the taste of turnip when you have it with bacon and cabbage, it's fabulous. But restaurants don't seem to use it. Whereas that's something I love to do, is just show people, we all love turnip. We're Irish. It's in our blood. And here it is in a restaurant dish. Try it. And it's just turnip. Like, you know, so.
Wonderful. And that's so creative to hear that. And I actually love turnip myself as well. I'm definitely going to try that. In terms of yourself, and when you go out to eat, and, you know, I mean, obviously you're a stickler for some. What's it? What drives you mad when you go into a restaurant?
Oh, God.
When we can soon again, hopefully.
Jeez, do you know what? It's so long, I've forgotten.
Oh, yeah.
The last meal I actually had was in our own restaurant. When I was on holidays, and the last night I came back and I went in, and the chefs were panicking at the thought of cooking for me. But do you know what? I there's nothing really that annoys me. I go out to enjoy a meal, and unless that meal is an awful food experience, there's nothing really that turns me off. I just enjoy going out. You know, as a chef, you don't get to go out as much as maybe other people do, because you're cooking on a lot of nights when people are having social occasions. So when you do get out, I think it's just important to embrace being out. The same way I think as soon as everything opens up, we're all going to embrace going out in a big way.
Absolutely.
So I can't think of anything offhand that would kind of annoy
me. No, but that's good to hear. A lot of people say, you know, people have too fussy servers or not enough servers, or, you know, it's hard to get it right.
Oh, but, geez, you know.
I was talking to people that actually stayed in Perry Place a while back, and they were saying that they had an amazing time there and they loved it. So I'm looking forward to getting to go in and try your turnip and a lot of your stuff there as well. You've picked a nice piece of music for us this evening, Keith.
I've picked Elbow, and it's a song called Magnificent. And it's just one of those, Elbow are a great band. Guy Garvey's a great songwriter, and they can create these amazing pieces of uplifting music. And I think throughout lockdown and whatever, I've actually gone back into music. I've rediscovered a lot of music that I love and that I maybe had ignored for a while. And Elbow are one of those bands that I've always loved and just hadn't listened to enough. And so they've kind of got me through a lot of lockdown. And this song is just very joyous, very uplifting and loud.
Wonderful. Well, Keith Piggott and Patricia Roberts from Number One Perry Place, thank you so much for joining us this evening on A Taste of Ireland. And now we listen to Elbow.